Good evening, Rabbi Yisai. Good evening. I want to share with you something which turned out to be a true story. It was years ago in Vienna. If you heard the story, please bear with me to the end, because the essential point is the last point. There was a family in Vienna that they they had a daughter who had an exceptionally beautiful voice. She sang, she had voice lessons, but ultimately her voice was really exceptional, an extraordinarily beautiful voice. And she was, I don't know the details, but she was overheard by somebody who worked in the Viennese opera. We know the Viennese opera to be one of the foremost and prominent operas in the world, especially in those years. And he overheard her singing. She says, this is quite an unbelievable voice. And he pulled her along, although she was from back, but she said, you should come and have a, I think it was an interview or something of those lines in the opera. And she sang against her. It was not the way she was brought up, but not the way, but she couldn't pull herself. She couldn't overcome her. And she sang. She sang there for an interview, and straight away they offered her just this unbelievable voice. This is extraordinary indeed. And they offered her on the spot. They offered her that, you know, if you want to promote your career, you can join the opera. We'll, you know, you can sing here. We'll give you the additional training, and we give you opportunities. And she was very torn about this because we all know it against halacha. Of course, we learned the halachas kol beish erva, and of course to sing in front of many goyim is an issa. She really didn't know that was a golden career in front of her, and really was something which she's passionate about and she's really good at and she really loves on the one hand, but on the other hand it's clearly against halacha, and she wasn't sure what to do. And she opened up to her parents, because she was only young, she was a teenage girl, and she told her parents, you know, I had behind your back I had that interview. And the father said, well, I don't know what to tell you, this is really against halacha, but I wasn't able to convince her. Now, with great Siyat Dishmaya, it happened to be that there's different Nuschos, but it was probably the Shotkev Rebbe, who was in Vienna in those years, one of the Chesid Shegdoilim, the Shotkev Rebbe. And he said, you know what, let's go to the Shotkev Rebbe, he's got something to say. And she was really not particularly interested, but okay, he pulled her along, and they went to the Shotkev Rebbe. And the Shotkev Rebbe, some say it was a Chofetz Chaim, but I think it makes more sense if it's Shotkev Rebbe. And I went to the Shotkev Rebbe, and he said, listen, I understand you. After explaining the situation, he said, you know, I can really appreciate your urge to go to the opera. What is it that you're going to have there? He said, well, I'm going to be singing, hopefully solos, and I'll be able to have a brilliant career there. I said, what are you going to get from the career? He said, well, I'll be very famous. And he said, what are you going to have from well, I have fame, international fame. Hopefully, if that career open in the opera, I'll make a career, I'll be famous. So apparently he replied and he says, listen, if you think that's fame, I can give you a bracha that if you are Moshe Nefesh and you don't do this, which is against halacha, if you're Moshe Nefesh and you don't make that step towards the opera and you pull yourself up and you don't do that, you're Moshe Nefesh, I give you a bracha that you're going to be famous in a different way. You're going to have children, you're going to be famous in a different way. She couldn't really be persuaded, but when he really guaranteed and he made the bracha and he really said that's what's going to happen, she was a bit hesitant, she had her reservation, but eventually after a day or two, she then said, okay, fine, I'm not going to do it. She pulled away from that and she pulled herself up and fine. It didn't take a long time that this young girl, she got engaged to a young man, to a Choshvi. It wasn't an extraordinary Hamad Chochem, but it was Eli Chayit. And got married and they had a baby, and they called the baby Shmuel. And Shmuel eventually grew to be an outstanding Talmud Chacham, and a Dayan, and a Posek, and a Gol Hadoi. It grew to be a Shmuel Halevi Vozna. Now, but this is not the end of the story. This is the famous part of the story, but I want to continue with an additional part, which turned out to be true. So, apparently, this story turned out to be the story went around a number of years ago. I remember when the story actually went around, and people tried to investigate if the story is actually true or not. Because there's a rumor going out that Vozna himself never actually shared the story. On the contrary, when they found out about this story, and they asked Avozna, is this story true? And he was on Nifta, when was it, a year ago? Yeah, Chalam, do you remember? Was it Sukkot? Pesach? Yeah, so that's really recently. He was Nifta Mamash only recently. And so they asked him if the story is true or not, and children and grandchildren and great-grandchildren, they urged him, and he always brushed it off. He never answered. He didn't say a clear yes. He didn't say a clear no. He didn't answer, is the story true story or not? It was a true story. And they urged him, and they asked him, and they nagged him, and he wouldn't reply. And he didn't understand. He said, if the story is true, nothing wrong with it. So say the story is true. And if the story is not true, so he should say the story is not true. It was unlike him to brush off like this. He was a good storyteller, Vozna. I remember myself, Vozna was a good storyteller. And he would know. So why was he so funny about the story? His reservations. So until one of the grand, and I heard it from a grandson myself. Grandson then eventually made the breakthrough, and he asked Avos, and he says, I said, Zayda, why is it, come on, I'm sure he didn't say the word come on to Avosna, but he said, what's behind it? And then he replied, and he said the following. He said, I'll tell you something, the story is a true story. It's absolutely true story. And I remember how my mother used to cry about it and used to say it. I know clearly the story is true, but I don't want the story to be publicized. I don't want people to say about the story, because the message of the story will be that, you know, Avosna, you know, became the Posek Hadoi, became the God Hadoi. He became the outstanding halachic authority of the century, you know, because he got a brocha from the Halech Shotkev Rebbe. He got a brocha from Shotkev Rebbe. If I would have had the brocha from Shotkev Rebbe, I'd also become a Talmid Chacham. At the moment, I didn't get a brocha, not from Chofetz Chaim, not from Shotkev Rebbe. I didn't get any brocha, fine, so I'm going to be I'm a simple man like everybody else. That's the message that people will get. He said, that's not the real reason is not that. If I got anywhere in Torah, Avosna said, if I got anywhere in Torah, it's because I schwitzed. I sat and I learned Torah every day, one day after the next. And I learned Be'asmada another day, another week, another month, another year. And I carried on and I schwitzed and I worked Be'asmada. And if I got anywhere in Torah, it's because of that. Of course, brachas help. Of course, yichas help. Of course, everything else. But ultimately, what really, really counts, what makes or breaks it, lemaaseh, is Be'asmada, is to sit and learn, to be a daman, and to just keep going and going. So he said, I didn't want this story to be spread because it conveys the wrong message. It conveys the wrong message that it comes from Brocha, Heilige Shot for Rebbe. People are going to say, I didn't get a Brocha, I'm not going to become a Gadol. I didn't get a Brocha, I'm not going to grow to be a Talmid Chacham. And therefore, it sends the wrong message. And that's what Avosna said, and so that's why I always brushed it off. That was the reason. He wasn't after only a few months after that he actually explained his reason behind it. I think this is such a powerful story. I think now, after Avosna's explanation, I think this is the moment where it's an absolutely powerful story. It's such a beautiful story, such a powerful story. I just felt like sharing it with you, Abbas. What do you think about it? It's an amazing story, no? How much an amazing story. Abbas, and Zechat Sadi, Vikol Shivachim. Yeah, okay. We are still in Siman Tzadik Sif Tes, and we're learning still the halachas of davening with the minyan, the shtadlus daven with the minyan. We learned yesterday, we got to know the story printed in Chofetz Chaim, which is Tov Zalman Mills. We spoke about that yesterday. And then we learned the Shulchan Aruch actually said, and that's what we're going to be addressing today, Mitzvah Hashem. What happens if somebody can't make it to a minyan? What's the second best? Same time should daven the same time, then there's a minyan, then he's minyan. Right. Now, we're going to be learning a few halachas over here. But one question which we're going to ask at this point, and hopefully we'll be able to solve it, which is not really so common in the Chofetz Chaim's times, and certainly not in Shulchan Aruch's times. You know, for centuries, there was every town had a shul, and the shul was the Shtot shul, and there was one shachis there, and there was one mincha there, and one mariv there. And there was possibly a shir, or there probably was a shir, but there was one shul, the Shtot shul. And the fact that we've got so many minyanim, which is beautiful, an abundance of shuls and minyanim, is very, very nice. But the ma'aser, we have to realize this is not what for centuries and centuries, every shtot, it was a shtot shul, the city shul. That's where people davened. There was a concept behind it, there was a beauty behind it. There was certainly ma'achet, the city was called achdus, and there was a reason for why it was only one shul. Personal for centuries. So when we talk about this, the concept of having many minyanim, according to all the shapes and colors and desires and heminhogim, so it's very nice. But really, a shtot used to have one shul. Somebody just sent me a text today. They said, "Why, if there's only one shul in town, so what's the shul you don't daven in?" What's the shul you don't daven in? It's a good point. Yeah. So we have to realize, right? So I'm just mentioning this for the following reason. If we talk about the concept of davening with a minyan, which is the best, and the second best is to daven with the time where the minyan davens, so I understand that throughout all the centuries that there was 8 o'clock shachis, or probably more likely a 7 o'clock shachis. In fact, even more likely a 6 o'clock shachis. And that's where everybody daven. If you can't make it to the minyan for whatever the reason is, then you're going to daven the same time. I understand that. One minyan in the city. You're going to be misyachis. You're connecting yourself to that minyan in town. I hear that. What about in some towns, some cities, that is every 10 minutes there's a minyan? Or every quarter of an hour? Or for that matter, every hour? There's a 7 o'clock shachis, 8 o'clock shachis. Maybe, what about if there's a town which is so well organized, there's a weekly spreadsheet with the active minyan, and you know exactly where there is, what time there's a minyan. So fine, so you can't go to shul for whatever the reason is. And you know there's a 6 o'clock shachis, okay fine, I'm going to sleep another 10 minutes because I know there's a quarter past 6 shachis. And you know there's a half past 6 shachis, there's a quarter to 7 shachis, there's a 7 o'clock shachis. And you can look, you can just, you put your press on, paste on, you know, you can see exactly on the spread when, and you're going to decide, which minyan you want to be misyachis to, depending on the many minyanim on the city. So I understand the concept of connecting yourself and davening the same time if there's one minyan. But how does this concept make sense if there's many minyanim in town? How does that concept make sense? Question? Question. What would you say? Very interesting. So that's very interesting. So you're saying that you'd have to daven the same time than your regular minyan. Than your regular minyan. What do you think about that? Regular minyan? Make sense? No, so it's not necessarily you missed it. It could be for an oiness. Somebody who can't get out of bed, whatever, or can't get out of the flat, the house, whatever.
Is that an oiness?
So it's interesting. So Emes, I did see, I don't know if it was Avilashi or Shlomo Zalman, actually says exactly what you're saying. I forgot, one of the Gedolei very recent poskim, he actually says that you have to actually daven the same time than your regular minyan. Yeah, I hear. Okay, let us see a bit of Mishnah Berurah over here. Good question. What about if you're away on holiday? What do you do then? If you're away on holiday and you're davening the same time, then, well, how does that concept make sense then?
Well, it's just practical. I mean, it would be the same time as if there's a minyan.
Right. Yeah, that's absolutely, yes, correct. If one is in a place in the holidays, then you have to work out what is your closest minyan. It could be quite far. And that could be why you haven't got an obligation. We're going to see these halachas that sometimes you are far enough that you don't have an obligation to join a minyan. Right? So then, now, if you don't have to join the minyan, Nevertheless, that's what the Ramah says over here. That's basically the halacha the Ramah is saying over here. The Ramah says, "What in the autumn don't be yishuvim ve'ein lo minyan. Yidnu are davening in yishuvim. They're living in villages. Ve'ein lo minyan. There is no minyan. Mikol makom yispalu shach b'zvaris b'zman shal tzibur mispalim." I imagine what it's talking about is tackle places that haven't got a minyan and they don't. It's too far for them to merge as a minyan. So it's quite similar to the case you're referring to. Nevertheless, you should try to join, you should daven at the same time, the closest minyan, the closest place as a minyan. Right. Yes. It's not, first of all, it's only a lechatchila. It means if for some reason or another you can't daven at the same time, it's not, it's just the second best. Of course, there's still a third best and a fourth best. So I'm saying it's not, but what the concept behind it, you're really asking, how does that work? Davening the same time than the minyan. Well, how does that, Reb Gideon wants to understand, what's that concept davening? We understand that physically, you're part of a minyan. Makes sense. But how does this concept make sense that you're not physically with a minyan, merely you're davening the same time than the closest minyan? How does that work? Yeah, it's true. He's not. You're right. It doesn't say closest. You're right. It doesn't have to be. Yeah, you're right. You're right. How does that make sense? Because you could always say that, you know, if you live in London, whatever time you daven, in Yerushalayim, for certainty so, whatever time you daven, there's going to be a minion. Right. Yeah. Right. What does that mean, kavanah with that minion? You have to picture yourself part of the minion. To align yourself. Right. So, I really understand your question. Yeah. Yeah. So you're asking really two questions. One point we said that you have to have a fixed minion that you have to align yourself with. That's point number one. Now you're trying to understand how does that concept make sense of davening the same time that I mean? How does that concept make sense? So probably the answer is that to some extent you're still shaykh to a tzibur if you're davening the same time in them. To some extent you're still, but to a very, very limited extent. And I haven't got a further explanation of that, but to some extent, you probably are shaykh to the minion for davening the same time in them. Yeah, but I appreciate your question. Okay. Now, there is a very interesting Mishnah Berurah over here. It's a Kotel Mebeis. I'm getting you may like this, because it's going to show to what extent it's only lechatchila. The Mishnah Berurah of Kotel Mebeis says, Bishman shal tzibur perish, Bishar shekeles Yisrael mispalim. So, yeah, when the shul is actually davening. Now he says the following. Uve Ashkenaz, and in Germany, this literally means Germany, Shenoagu lehaktim arvis. In the kehillas that daven mincha and ma'ariv together. So in many kehillas, in countless kehillas, the minhag was, to daven mincha and ma'ariv together, and there was no ma'ariv bizmanoi. So he says, what is a person meant to do if for one reason or another, he is not able to daven with the mincha ma'ariv, and he wants to, he's not able to join the minyan. When is he meant to daven ma'arif? Is he meant to daven the ma'arif together with the mincha ma'arif time of the shul, of his local shul, which he's not joining? Or is he better off davening ma'arif bizmanu banacht? That's a very interesting question. To somebody's on holidays, and there's one that's very common in the holiday places, that there's one mincha ma'arif. Okay, and for one reason, whatever reason is, you can't make it for that minyan. Are you meant to daven mincha? For sure, you daven with it at the same time than them. But now, with regards to ma'ariv, are you meant to daven at the same time than them? They're davening mincha ma'ariv. You daven with them. Same. You daven mincha. You daven ma'ariv. Although you're separate, you're in a different place, you daven the same time than them. Or is it better to daven ma'ariv bizman or later by nacht? Good question. Says, what would you say? Daven later. Says the Heilige Chofetz Chaim and Mr. Zakiel, says Mishnah Berurah, Be'ashkenaz shenagu la'akdim arvis, k'mo shekos tzim reish lamedet, yochid ador bekfayv, somebody lives in a village, oy badech, or he's traveling, tzorech la'amtin atzizek kechovim. You have to daven nacht. Mamash, like you're saying. You have to wait until nacht. Which, by the way, tells you to what extent it's only lechatchila, because you can't daven ma'arif. You can't daven ma'arif. But it's still the lechatchila of davening b'tzitzik echom b'yechid. This is better than davening the same zman than the tzibur mispalim. Okay. Sifkat lamed gimel me. No. Yeah, of course, you're yoytze if you don't. But it's again in the lines of lechatchilas. You're pushing yourself further down. Afal pikein mipnei shumokin kovu ale kedusha. Mishmur is addressing the idea of davening in shul. He says the reason why we should daven in shul, it's a mokum kavua for kedusha, for tefillah, and the tefillah is amur miskabel there. Okay. So that's really the Mishnah Berurah here. It says that even if you're davening b'yichidus, you should really daven if you can in a shul. If it's possible to daven in a shul, it's always better, even if there's no minyan there. Okay. So if you're in shulchan aruch, kshe'oymet imatzibu. If you are davening with a tzibu, with a minyan, you're not allowed to daven ahead of them. If you really feel this is really getting boring, oh, this is such a verschleppte chazen. This is, oh, I can't. I want to just get on with it. You want to daven ahead of the chazen. Says, you're not allowed to do that. You're not allowed to rush. You're not allowed to daven quicker than the tzibu. Unless it's already getting end of Sof's man, And then you know that if you daven without for shlep techazen, you're going to end up missing sefsman. So then you're allowed to hurry up. You're allowed to daven ahead. If they are schlepping, they're going to miss the sefsman, then you can rush, you can daven ahead of them. But if not, you're not allowed to daven ahead of the tzibur. What's the reason for that? Mishneh Berurah says, the reason for that is, Mishneh Berurah says the reason is because it's Mishneh Berurah says you are mevazeh the tzibur, you're disrespectful to the minyan. But if it's not time limited, if you're not missing the sozman, you spala piyutim, you should daven the piyutim ve'atchines im atzibu v'lo yafrish v'lo yifrish min atzibu afidu lasik b'divrei Torah. Don't separate yourself from the tzibu even to learn Torah. Ein le'altzim samiches. So even if you're really getting bored, and even if they're really schlepping, you may not be purge yourself from the tzibu. You may not separate yourself from the tzibu. They are davening piyutim, join them from piyutim. Now he's doing a massive shtick chazonas. You're not allowed to just take a safe and start learning. You're not allowed to. You have to listen. You have to suffer in silence. You have to suffer in silence. Yeah, you can't be pushed from the tzibur. You can't separate this from the tzibur. I have a feeling, Rabbi Isai, that this is maybe partially the reason why many shuls have dropped the idea of piyutim. I don't know. The question is much better than the answer. The question is why that the piyutim, which have been written by such holy Rishonim centuries ago, and it was kept by Mesirus Nefesh. Thousands of Yidden for hundreds of years kept the Piyutim as their treasures. And then suddenly, over the last very recent period, many shuls just stopped the Piyutim for some unknown reason. It's a pele. All the shuls are right. Look at every machzor. You open up every machzor under the sun, besides Sfadish, only any Ashkenaz. Plenty of Piyutim. Look at any machzor of all the other time. Tons and tons of pages of Piyutim. And all the Eden were Moshe Nefesh to say the Piyutim. And it suddenly has been completely dropped in so many shuls and minutes. Where did that come from? I don't know. At the embassy, I don't really know. But I have a feeling it may have to do with this, that if Eden anyway don't listen, if there are Eden who don't listen, they're opening up the Sfarim, they're doing other things, they even start schmoozing, whatever it may be, then it's such an issa that it's better to drop the Piyutim than to allow such a thing to happen. That's probably where it came from. Have you got any other pshatim otherwise? Have you any other understandings otherwise? Any other explanations?
Are we talking about just Yom
Tov? This specific, what aspect? Which halacha? The Piyutim aspect, yes, indeed.
Any other piece that would join the week?
No, Piyutim was never said. No. Well, Purim, but otherwise, I'm saying generally, Piyutim are not said during the week.
Just the idea of staying with the Sibur, if someone were to start.
That halacha always applies.
If someone starts up, people came to Zimra early, so then they're going to be Shmoneh.
Right, so we are, very good question. So referring specific to Shmoneh Esrei. Don't start Shmoneh Esrei ahead of the people. Of course, Pirkei Dezimra is fine. Of course, if you come ahead and you say Birkas HaShachar before that's perfectly in order. Yeah, it's referring specifically to Shmoneh Esrei. Here, the Mishneh Berurah is telling us an interesting halacha that that if a person davens, I'm just finding Mishneh Berurah. Yeah. Yeah. The Mishneh Berurah addresses the question, which is sometimes negea, if you daven a different tefillah than the tzibur, say, I can't think of a scenario, can you help me, that you for some reason are davening a shachris whilst the tzibur is davening musaf, or vice versa. Can you think of a case? They have started musaf and you're davening shachris. Okay, that would be a case.
Well, if they're davening maariv early,
you're davening mincha. Right. Good case. Very good case. Right. The question is, are you actually davening with the tzibur then? Another similar shaila. Yeah. Is that considered tefillah b'tzibur? A similar shaila. If you're in Eretz Yisrael and you're davening a different Shemoneh Esrei because you're ben chutz la'aretz, you're davening a different Shemoneh Esrei than ben Eretz Yisrael, or vice versa. And ben Eretz Yisrael who comes over here, he's davening his Cholamoy Tefillah or Yom Tefillah, and it's ready, you know, whatever it may be, is that considered Tefillah B'tzibur or not? So although there is various exceptions and various cases, that the Mishnah Berurah seems to be learning that the general concept is that if you daven the same time than Tzibur, it's generally considered Tefillah B'tzibur. Okay, we'll be speaking more in greater detail in Sifkot Lamed Dalet. There's various points that still need to be addressed. So just this is a slight introduction. So just to recap what we covered tonight, Imitz Hashem. We spoke about the concept of davening the same time than the Tzibur. And we also learned that if one is unable to access a full-fledged minyan, one should then daven at least at the same time than a minyan is davening. We learned that if the Yidin are davening mincha ma'ariv together, and you're not accessing the minyan, then you should be davening ma'ariv bizmanoi later. We also learned that one should always, ideally, even be chidus, one should try to daven in shul, if that's possible. The reason is because it's a holy place, it's a heiliger place, and tefillah is on his scabble there. We also learned that if a person is davening with a tzibur, he should always aim to daven with the tzibur, and he should not rush and daven ahead of them, because you're not davening tefillah b'tzibur if you do so. You should always daven Shmoneh Esrei simultaneously with the tzibur. And we'll speak in greater detail this halacha, Emet Shem, in future Mishnah Berurahs. Fine. Good Shabbos, Rabbi Yisai.